Welcome back. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. It's been more than 2 weeks since Hurricane Irma roared across southwest Florida, and finally, some residents of Bonita Springs are able to return to their waterlogged homes. WGCU's Quincy Walters visited one of those homes and has this report.
I'm on a dock at the Imperial River in Bonita Springs. Right now, everything is calm, but with the rains from Hurricane Irma, this river crested and flooded nearby neighborhoods, and some of those neighborhoods are still waterlogged.
On Saunders Avenue, just a few blocks away from the Imperial River, people are just returning to their homes now that the floodwaters are receding. Every house on this street has furniture and other belongings out on the curb.
My name is Andy Vo, and I am cleaning out my house. Got flooded and underwater.
What have you lost?
Everything.
Vo shows me inside the house he's been renting for 2.5 years. The first thing I notice, there are no walls, just beams.
My landlord came and ripped it off.
How does it make you feel? Like the floor is dirty from the water, there's drywall everywhere. How do you feel seeing this?
Like mad, depressed.
Vo will live with friends for now. The South Florida Water Management District's Phil Flood, yes, that's his name, says a lot of the areas that flooded are low-lying older neighborhoods in the floodplain that lack drainage. But Imperial Parkway, which is adjacent to Andy Vo's street, has drainage ditches and gutters along the roadway, and the area still flooded. A few reasons why?
Their system is plugged up and is not draining properly, or it's trying to drain into an area that is already flooded.
Back in Bonita Springs, at the corner of Imperial Parkway and Saunders Avenue, an improvised donation center has popped up under five tents.
We have canned foods, diapers, wipes, clothes, you know, oatmeal, cereals, bottles of waters, Depends for the older people. We have pasta, red sauces.
Peter Lance started this donation center after his house was damaged. He says he got 6 inches of water in his home across the street from the tented donation area. He took out his drywall and turned his attention towards helping others.
We live in this neighborhood, so we're trying to give back to the community.
Phil Flood with the South Florida Water Management District says right now there's a short-term solution in place to drain Bonita Springs.
And so we're manually moving water from one watershed into another, so that we can take a little bit of pressure off of the Imperial River so that those water levels will drop a little quicker.
And it is along Bonita Beach Road southeast where you can see the pumps responsible for taking water out of Bonita Springs, channeling it through a ditch towards the Cocohatchee River.
Ultimately, the water will end up in the Gulf of Mexico. As for a long-term solution, Phil Flood says Bonita Springs and Lee County are looking at ways to make improvements to the region's drainage because flooding is a problem, even without a hurricane. Quincy Walters, WGCU News, Bonita Springs.
And taking steps to avoid that kind of severe flooding in the future and preserving the natural wetlands that make up southwest Florida are part of the decision by Lee County commissioners last week to purchase more than 3,900 acres of undeveloped wetlands known as Edison Farms, a patch of land east of I-75 and just south of Corkscrew Road. The purchase was made as part of the county's ongoing Conservation 2020 project, but it didn't come cheap. Edison Farms cost more than $42 million, and that's roughly half of the county's budget for the Conservation 2020 Fund. The land of Edison Farms can hold the kind of rainfall routinely dropped by hurricanes and other major storms that pummel South Florida, which some argue can mean the difference between catastrophic flooding that Houston saw during Hurricane Harvey and the less damaging flooding that won't take decades to recover from. Here to talk about the multi-million dollar purchase of Edison Farms and what it could mean to Southwest Florida is Nicole Johnson, the Director of Environmental Policy at the Conservancy of Southwest Florida. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you.
Also joining us today is Marissa Carozzo. She's the Senior Environmental Policy Specialist, also with the Conservancy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Conservation 2020 and the $42 million purchase of Edison Farms. What's your take on how Lee County Commissioners spent that money? Do you think it was the right move? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So Marissa Carozzo, let's start from the beginning. Can you explain to me what Conservation 2020 is? And what are the goals?
Absolutely. Conservation 2020 is the Lee County Environmentally Sensitive Land Acquisition and Management Program. It's actually been around for over 20 years now. It started in 1996. And the impetus for the program was the unprecedented growth in Lee County at that time. And a group of citizens banded together to get the program started and on the ballot. And it was just re-upped last year in 2016 when Lee County voters voted overwhelmingly at 84% to continue the program. So the goals of 2020 are to protect the natural resources of Lee County, its wildlife habitat, its water resources, its water recharge areas. And in order to do that, it's a willing seller program. Properties are nominated by the property owners. The county now also has the ability to go out and solicit nominations. But again, it is still a willing seller program. So only properties that are willingly nominated by the owners can move through the program. And then it's ranked.
Can the county identify lands that are kind of critical that would be important that may be privately owned and approach that landowner and say, this might be a good candidate for, you know, Conservation 2020 land? Mm-hmm. Can we talk?
Yes, absolutely. They can do that. There's certain areas, particularly within the density reduction groundwater recharge area.
That's the DRGR
that's
we hear.
That's the DRGR.
Now, that's different. Mm-hmm. So can you explain to me DRGR and then how Conservation 2020 lands fit into that?
Sure. So Conservation 2020 is a particular program, and it has over 25,000 acres of preserved lands now. And now the DRGR itself is a specific area within Southeast Lee County. And Nicole is our expert on the DRGR, and she can certainly fill in the details on that.
Okay, so what is the DRGR, Nicole?
The DRGR is an area of 80,000 plus acres, generally located south of State Road 82, going to the Collier County line, and then east of I-75, and it's the density reduction groundwater resource area. It was designated by state mandate back in 1990 because the state acknowledged that the majority of Lee County's public drinking water supply came from this area. And at the time, the state felt that there was just too much density packed into Lee County's comprehensive plan. So it was put in place in 1990. And almost immediately after that, you had large parcels of land coming in and petitioning to be removed from the DRGR so that they could intensify their land use. And they were allowed to do that.
And develop with neighborhoods that we've seen stretching east of I-75.
Yes, absolutely. One of the other uses allowed in the DRGR, ironically, it's the source of our drinking water, and yet lime rock mining was also allowed there. So you can see it's a bit of an enigma. And there are some inherent incompatibilities out there. And that's what the county has really been grappling with over the past probably decade. And they've done a lot of studies to determine how best to protect the DRGR. It's a mosaic of upland habitat, wetland habitat. It's home to listed species such as the Florida panther. And it has tremendous capacity to actually hold floodwaters in a lot of those wetlands. So it's a really important area that continues to evolve.
But then the county is having to deal with the fact that they do want to see some development because that ends up increasing tax revenue when you have more homes and more people. So it's kind of a balancing act that they have to play.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there are certain areas within the DRGR that are acknowledged could be appropriate for some form of development intensification. It really is a balancing act, making sure that that development is balanced out with above and beyond habitat and hydrologic restoration projects. Now, in the case of Edison Farms, because you're looking at an almost intact, pristine piece of land, that was really the DRGR piece that everyone said, you need to purchase it. You need to set it aside. You don't have to do a whole lot of structural restoration there. Buy it. Keep it intact. It is right now functioning as one of the most critical green infrastructure pieces out there. On our drive up, we passed by it. It is holding water. It is doing its job. It is earning that $42 million plus price tag that the county will be paying for it.
And then when we want to, let's keep talking about the numbers, though. So if that whole area had been developed with, you know, the strip malls and the houses and all that stuff, if that had been developed and Hurricane Irma had hit, what would have happened to all of that water? And is there any way to put a price tag on the amount of damage that water could have done had it not been able to sit there?
Certainly. And all that water would have been displaced, and it would have had to have gone somewhere else. Probably the Estero community, the village of Estero would have been heavily impacted. Downstream through the brooks, they would have been impacted. And that's one of the things that you see a number of different businesses now really taking a look at. The fact that an acre of wetland can store 1 to 1.5 million gallons of flood water is pretty impressive. And so once you start removing those wetlands, what is the commensurate impact, financial impact, to the neighborhoods? And you're seeing different companies such as Lloyd's of London and different insurance companies now sponsoring these sorts of studies because they want to know just how vulnerable the people that they are insuring are in these coastal areas that can be hit by storms.
So there's a question that's coming from Facebook. Mark Cranford wants to know, will there be public access to this land?
So Conservation 2020 always explores the possibility of having public access. I know that that is one of the goals for the acquisition of Edison Farms. However, we're just going to have to look at once the property is acquired, that public access can be done safely and feasibly.
Why would somebody want to access it? I mean, it sounds like it's a giant field full of water right now.
Right now, yes.
It is. But during the dry season, it does dry out. There could be trails, wildlife viewing, all sorts of passive recreation opportunities.
Oh, birding would be great.
Absolutely. It's part of the core foraging areas for the wood stork. So, yeah, absolutely lots of wildlife viewing.
Mm-hmm. So you said passive use.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain that to me a little bit?
So passive use is activities such as hiking, bird watching, that sort of activity, not sort ATVs or
a dirt bike path or something.
Yeah,
I see what you're saying. So where you're not really impacting that land, but you're letting it sit there and do its job, but then also being able to enjoy. But that's still yet to be determined.
Correct.
Okay. So what were the plans for the Edison Farms project? I know, Nicole, you said that you kind of have been following that history. What did the original owners want to do with it over the years?
Edison Farms has a fascinating history. It could be the basis for a Carl Hiaasen novel in the future, perhaps.
He's great.
I know. And he doesn't have to make this stuff up. He can just pull it from South Florida stories. But back in the early 90s, Edison Farms was actually part of a larger property. And there was a proposal to have a 7,100 acre. It was called Gulfview New Town. And it would have included 15,000 homes. Part of that land was sold to Bonita Bay Group, and that's now the Brooks. The Edison Farms portion was not part of that development. So you had these development ideas starting all the way back in the early 90s. In the early 2000s, Edison Farms proposed to be annexed into Bonita Springs in order to intensify and have 8,000 homes. That was rejected by the city of Bonita Springs. In the mid-2000s, you had, of course, that infamous $10 million earmark that Congressman Don Young placed into the Transportation Committee budget in order to put in an interchange at I-75 at Edison Farms. That was then pulled back. You've had proposals to put in large drainage ditches through Edison Farms to drain it, put culverts under I-75 to facilitate drainage. The Red Sox Stadium was proposed on Edison Farms at one point. So all sorts of different ideas for acquisition. Once Red Sox Stadium was rejected, at that point the owners defaulted and the bank started taking over. And we now have arrived finally at acquisition. So this has been truly decades in the making from a number of organizations and individuals who have been single-minded in staving off any development of the Edison Farms project. So it's something that I think the community can feel really proud of. And we need some good news this month. So this was a wonderful way to enter into September 2017. We'll remember not just Irma, but Edison Farms.
That price, though, of $42 million, do you feel like that was high? Do you think that was investigated well enough? I mean, if somebody's thinking about putting a baseball stadium there, then they were hoping to get a lot of money out of that piece of land. So what do you think about that type of pricing?
Well, the county bases its offer on appraisals. So through the Conservation 2020 program, there's always at least two certified appraisals. And in this case, they received three. And they offered the highest of the three appraisals to the Investors Warranty of America, who owns the property. And they were able to negotiate a purchase agreement at that price.
Mm-hmm. So that's what they went for. And I wanted to ask another question. It's kind of a little devil's advocate here, but is this kind of kicking the can down the road? They got in exchange for selling this land, Investors Warranty Incorporated out of Iowa is going to now be able to transfer its right to build more than 250 homes to another part of Lee County. Is that kind of kicking the can down the road there? Is it going to eventually come up as another problem, or is just this particular piece of land was that sensitive?
Well, certainly this particular piece of land was that sensitive, but it's my understanding that they intend to transfer that density into an urbanized area, so that would be the appropriate place for intensification.
Something that's already paved?
Yes.
Is what you're talking
yes.
about? Okay. Well, that'll be interesting to see how that happens. So the deal for Edison Farms is expected to close by the end of the year, but once the legal sale for the land is done, what's next for it? What's next in the planning process for this piece of land?
It would go through the land management of plan development process. So County Lands and Conservation 2020 program has a dedicated staff that looks at how is the best way to manage this property, how is the most appropriate way to give public access, as well as how to restore it. If there are areas that need cleaning up of exotics or how and where the best places to put trails, all of those sorts of things go into that planning process, and they'll develop a management plan in order to do that.
So does it need any kind of rehabilitation? Is there any kind of rush to get that done?
Well, I know that there are, you know, certainly some pockets of exotic infestation on the property. You know, Melaleuca is always a problem in Southwest Florida. So there's certainly going to be some that will need to be done. But from our understanding, it's in pretty decent shape.
It's in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just those invasives. And so it's going to take the time to get out there and get those invasives out of there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's going to be an ongoing management process. And that's the case for all Conservation 2020 preserves, is going out and ensuring that the native habitat has the opportunity to thrive.
And that's an issue also for most of us that have a backyard.
Indeed.
I mean, these invasives are all over the place. You can't get away from them. We have another question from Facebook. Peter Stoney from Stonehill, will it help stop the flooding on Island Park Road and Bonita Springs? That's the question. He says, if it's not going to stop that kind of flooding in Bonita Springs, then the money should have been spent for that problem. So he's saying that the $42 million that was spent on this land should have been spent instead, I guess, to fix the flooding issue in Bonita Springs.
Well, first of all, Conservation 2020, the funds for that program are supposed to go to protect environmentally sensitive land. And the flood protection that's provided by these wetlands that naturally store water is a definite benefit of these properties. I think that for other flood protection opportunities, you would need to look at funds outside of the Conservation 2020 program in order to address those.
Mm-hmm. And there have been a lot of efforts made within the city of Bonita Springs to take a look at a number of issues, including flood storage, flood capacity. A number of years ago, there was the Citizen Water Strategy Task Force that was put together by Bonita City Council to take a look at issues such as flooding and how do you use your natural infrastructure to help protect the residents within eastern Bonita Springs. And a number of really positive recommendations have come out of that, and many of those have been implemented and are in the process of being brought up to speed. I know that within the Pine Lake Preserve, which is another Conservation 2020 parcel in Bonita Springs, they're looking at redirecting water flow and rehydrating that area. And of course, anytime you can rehydrate a hydrologically altered and water-starved wetland, then you are expanding capacity and allowing water that could be in someone's backyard to be appropriately placed into these existing wetland areas. So I think a lot is being done. It's certainly an ongoing issue, but I think that the Water Management District, City of Bonita Springs, Lee County, everyone is working together to help resolve some of those problems.
Well, it's interesting how they use the science and experience to understand how this water behaves. And understanding how water behaves and where it wants to go, I mean, not that it has a mind, but, you know, where it tends to want to settle is a big thing to look at. And it takes a while to figure that out. When was that piece of 2020 land that you said in Bonita Springs acquired? Do you remember? I'm sorry. I don't mean to put you on the spot. I know we're not talking about that piece. We're talking about Edison. But
well, it was acquired a number of years ago. And the hydrologic restoration has been part of that management plan that, quite frankly, needs funding. And so once the funding is there, and this may be a great impetus to say it's important to move that up to the front of the line.
All right. Well, thanks so much. We're going to have to leave it there, but I want to thank our guest, Nicole Johnson, the Director of Environmental Policy at the Conservancy of Southwest Florida. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Also, thanks to Marissa Carozo, Senior Environmental Policy Specialist, also with the Conservancy.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith, John Davis, and Rachel Iacovone. Our director is Richard Chinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1 WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM NPR for Southwest Florida.